Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. So don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We are joined in this first part of our program by Dr. Dallas Dance. Hold on a second. Here he is. Welcome, Dr. Dance.
Hey,
have a seat. Join us. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Good to have you here. And the number here is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I've had a dozen emails already, people saying, some said in the beginning, when are you going to have Dr. Dance on? Very funny. We have him on today. And people calling, waiting to hear what he has to say. One of the youngest school superintendents in the United States of America here in Baltimore. In Baltimore County. And Dr. Dance, welcome. Good to have you on the program with us.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to be here.
So let me just begin. Why we know your story. You were in Houston. You were a rising star early, taught for 2 years.
I did.
Right? So why did you choose to kind of seek this out in Baltimore, which is way away from where you used to work?
Well, I think it was one of the opportunities that came where the preparation I had been doing in terms of this profession and the opportunity with Baltimore County just came together at the same time. I was not looking for to leave what I was doing.
You were in Houston when this happened, right?
I was in Houston when it was happening, and I was not looking for an opportunity. But definitely when approached with the opportunity to come to Baltimore County, having an opportunity to visit, talk to several individuals about the county, about its school system. And really what I was seeing is that a lot of folks had a lot of passion around public education, and that was what drove me to come here, because it was a community that said, we understand how we each play a role into making our school system better. And so the opportunity really just met with me being prepared and feeling I was prepared for the opportunity to come here.
And folks, lines are open, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Baltimore County, a lot of our listeners live in Baltimore County. I think of all the school systems, we've been covering education here pretty intensively for the last 20 years. So you get a lot of calls from us over the course of time. It's a passion here as well. But Baltimore County is one of the most diverse school systems in the entire state.
It is.
Maybe in around the country, just in terms of its range of just the geographic range. But demographically, white, black, Asian, Latino, working class, wealthy, poor people. And kids go to public school from all those groups.
You're right.
Which is not a common thing.
Well, you're right. And that's what attracted me to this great county. What a lot of folks don't know is they just see the last 2 years I was in Houston, Texas. But I'm originally from Virginia.
And where'd you grow up in Virginia?
Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And originally got my start working with Henrico County Public Schools, which literally I tell folks this, and I'm being honest, it's the sister school system to Baltimore County. Baltimore County is just double the size of Henrico. But when you came to Henrico, it was the melting pot of the world. Every single demographic you can imagine, every single economic lever was in that county. And that's what you see in Baltimore County. I was riding around Dundalk and Essex today. You can go up to Pikesville. You can go down to Catonsville, and you're going to see
Hereford.
You can see a different type of population, different type of environment, different type of world. So that's what attracted me to this county, because while we each have our own individual communities, all of us still plays a role in making sure the school system continues to move forward.
So how do you approach that? When you work in an urban school system like Dr. Alonzo does here in Baltimore City, where the studios are, and he's been on the show 3-4 dozen times since mm-hmm. he's been here, it's a very different system. It's a system that is mostly, the majority of the kids are African-American, poor working class kids, or working class kids in the school system. And you have a set of issues that revolve around any city in America that these kids have to face. But you have a different issues to face. So the kid who goes to Pikesville, who comes from a Jewish home or a black home or a Latino home they come from, or a kid who is living in Dundalk, is very different than what a kid faces who goes to the Laney Valley, which has a lot of money, or Hereford. So when you have to put your hands around that, does it change the way you look at issues of, and I'll get more specific in a moment, but issues of evaluation, issues of how you approach education and how and pedagogy in those schools? Does it change it?
Well, it doesn't change your expectation for kids.
I would not expect that.
Well, if you start with that, if you start with your high expectations for all kids, it does change in terms of the level of resources and support that might be needed for those students to meet that expectation. And so what we did clearly coming on board is said that with 174 school centers and programs, we cannot treat every single school the same. So we tiered every single school tiers 1 through 3.
What does that mean?
And tiers 1 are those schools who are meeting their achievement targets. These are schools who get support from us, but it's sort of based on as needed. Principals can request it. We give it. Tier 2 are schools who are meeting some indicators, missing some indicators, and so we have a little bit more targeted interventions that we do. But then we have those tier 3 schools, and these are schools who are not meeting all the benchmarks that we've set forth as a school system, and they need more targeted support. So they get additional resources, additional support from folks from my office with curriculum and instruction. And I meet with those assistant superintendents frequently. As a matter of fact, I was in a meeting this afternoon with them trying to figure out what do we need to do differently or do better to make sure these schools still meet the expectation that we've set for all 107,000 students in this district. But one of the things that I really, really love about being in this community is that our principals know their communities. And so when they know their communities, they know what their school needs to move that community forward because the school is the centerpiece of that community. Our job then is to figure out how do we tier our resources to make sure those goals are met.
So this might be a, sound like a silly question. I'll open the phones here, but it really isn't. Is there a difference when a superintendent is 31 than 51?
In terms
of how they approach the work? You know what I'm saying? No, because really, I mean...
Well, I always tell people, Mark, seriously, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you really were? But in saying that, though, I think if anything, it allows me to have a connection with kids that's so deep that they understand that they have to play a critical role if we're going to move our system forward. As adults, we can't move our system forward alone. We do everything day in and day out for them. And so if they're not partners with us in this process, if they don't understand how their life's plan needs to be correlated with what the district is looking to do to move our system forward, it's not going to happen. We had a student town hall meeting last week.
From the East Side schools.
We did. And we're going to do another one in the spring. And quite frankly, when I go to schools, I pull a group of about 8 to 10 students till I hear their student voices. But honestly, those students asked some pretty thought-provoking and tough questions.
What I understood, right.
And the good thing that I felt leaving that meeting was, one, we needed more time. But two, the same thing those students were saying were the same things that communities have been saying as we've traveled around. We've done 18 community meetings since I've been here, and literally the same thing students were saying. We want more course options. We want to make sure our teachers are prepared. We want more technology options. We want to make sure that our buildings are suitable to learning. Those are the same things that I'm hearing from the community. But the only thing that I say is that with me being so close in age with them, I make sure that constantly they're at the table when we're making those decisions.
Let me open the phones here and come back to several questions. We're going to look at everything from teacher evaluations to SAT questions to issues of security in schools and the approach you took after the shootings in those schools, okay. Shooting in the one school, 410-319-8888. And Brian, you're on the air. Hello, Brian, you're on the air.
This is Dr. Morrison with the Baltimore County Alliance of Black School Educators.
Hey, Brian. It's good to hear your
Welcome.
Voice, man.
It's good to hear you, too. Glad to hear you made it to WEAA. It's a great, great radio station.
It's good to be here.
Just in terms of what the kinds of conversations we've been having, I just wanted to call in and acknowledge your continued efforts to make sure that all of our students are receiving the opportunity to move forward. And as a part of that, the whole idea of connecting teachers and students through, as you move forward and dealing with the realignment of the curriculum, putting the people at the table who deal with culturally relevant pedagogy. I heard a blurb as I was getting to the radio about pedagogy. I wasn't quite able to hear all that conversation. But could you speak a little bit about how we can use a culturally relevant pedagogy in realigning the curriculum and making sure that that is a aspect of teachers knowing their students. Because at the end of the day, what makes the difference in a child's education is the relationship that they have with the student. And the key component of a culturally responsive pedagogy is exactly that, teachers knowing their students. So on that note, I'll just get off the air, and we're looking forward to seeing you on the 20th as well.
I will. I'll see you next week, Brian. But what Brian is talking about literally is something we've had several conversations, we'll continue to have conversations about, and we approach it from a couple of angles. One, we have a director of equity and assurance for our school system now, a director of cultural proficiency. And so really what we are using that position now for is really professional development, where the person used to be sort of community outreach. If someone had a concern that was regarding minority affairs, that individual would deal with it. And what we said no is, as an organization, this person needs to be at the table as we're writing our curricula, but also at the table as we plan professional development for our entire system. And so we've elevated that role, and Dr. Lisa Williams is doing a phenomenal job in that role. Matter of fact, she and I have a meeting set up next week. The other thing, too, is that we have to continue sharing with the community the fact that our community has and will continue to change. So the demographics of Baltimore County 5, even 10 years ago are no more. I mean, we were viewed 10 years ago as being a suburban school system. Right now, we are viewed as a suburban urban school system. But if the demographics continue to go as we see them going and forecast them going, in the next 10 years, we're going to be known as an urban suburban school system.
What does that mean?
It means that, matter of fact, right now, the majority of our student population are minority students. So we are a majority minority school system.
Asian, Latino, and Black.
Asian, Latino, and Black. And it's a situation where if we don't continue sharing that information with individuals and coupling that sharing information with individuals with the professional development that comes with building systemic, focused, caring relationships with young people, we're not going to make any movement.
I mean, you have schools in the system that are majority African-American, like Randallstown and Woodlawn, mm-hmm. schools that are majority white, like Hereford. But you also have something very different in the public school system, which are a huge number of schools that are really racially integrated.
Yes, completely diverse environments.
Which is not something that happens in a lot of school systems in today's world.
It doesn't, but I'm going to tell you, that's the beauty of public education. The good thing is that the students are interacting with each other because the world's going to be interacting with them the same particular way in which they're doing. What we see is that our students have no problem with that. Our students have grown up in this. They're interacting with each other.
The grown-ups have more problems with it than the students,
too,
for sure.
It's making sure that all of our adults in our schools have the mindset that every single kid, regardless of your racial background, your ethnic background, but even your social economic background, you can be successful. And so what I've said very clearly to folks is that we benchmark how well we're doing and the relationship that we have with kids with how we would want our own child to be doing if they were in that same situation. And when you raise the level of expectation that you would want your own child to be performing at a certain level, then, yeah, we have to raise what we're doing in terms of class and performance. And then, you know, we can push on that aspect, but we also have to push on the professional development piece as well, too. So really, as a teacher, what does it mean to have a thorough, thoughtful, caring relationship for your students? And so even through the situations we've had with safety and security in our school system, those are the reactive components, Mark. What I've said is that it's always got to be a proactive approach. Do we have environments on school campuses where kids feel connected? So you can have the best learning environment in the world for a young person, but if they're not connected to adults, if they're not connected to somebody in that school who owns them and who they can go to, they can have a relationship with them, and who will not let them use excuses to make things happen, then nothing's going to happen in that school. And so we've all talked about how do we build culturally relevant relationships with kids where they feel connected to an adult in that building.
So a couple of things. Let's talk about, you said safety, and there's a couple of things we want to raise before you. I know you have to leave here. This is a shortened from an hour to a half an hour. I understand.
You're fine.
That's fine. So we'll get you back for a longer time.
You're
the
fine.
Next time. But so when the shooting took place at the school at Perry Hall, the response was we were waiting. A lot of people were waiting to see what the response would be. At first, we heard about the wands being given to human resource. Is that what they're called?
The school resource officers.
School resource officers. Right, which is another name for school police, I suppose.
It is.
Right.
It is.
Just checking.
You said human resources with a different angle.
Right, different angle. So, but then you hired, you put in position a man that doesn't have a public safety background. And if somebody, is that a contradiction? What does that say about your approach to when you put Dale Ronson?
Dale Ronson.
Ronson. When you put Dale Ronson in that position to kind of see that. And he comes more out of a counseling background, out of working with the most troubled kids in the school system. So talk about your reasoning for hiring him and what your approach is to that.
He does. And let's go back to sort of a 50,000-foot view of the situation. One, in my entry plan coming on board into this position, I always was going to be studying safety and security. It was always going to be my expectation that we expand our safety and security efforts. Of course, having the situation happen on the first day of school at Perry Hall High School, and then we had another situation that happened at Stemmers around middle school, we accelerated our efforts in terms of expanding that department. And when I was looking for someone to run the department, I came across tons of qualified resumes. But at the same time, while I want to make sure we have a wonderful reactive approach when things happen, I care more about the proactivity. What are we doing to prevent things like this from happening on our campuses? And what I learned is every time I had a question in terms of what schools were doing or were expected to do to deal with a crisis, Dale was the man. Dale had the answers. And so what I realized is that if we had someone like Dale who was focused strictly on being proactive, having the reactive pieces just in case, because we're not immune to those situations, but really putting efforts around proactive strategies on our campuses, we could get some traction. We could make some movement. Dale had the relationships with principals. Dale knew what needed to be done in terms of having culturally relevant cultures on campuses that were built around school safety, and he was the man for the job. And what I realized, too, is that we focus so much on what's in the red book. What do we do in case something happens? Dale then turned the conversation and said, okay, so what are we doing to prevent bullying on our campuses? What are we doing to address character development on our campuses? Things that we want to be talking about. What types of systems do we have that kids can report incidents before they even occur on our campuses? What are we doing to train our schools around making sure that there are significant relationships with kids on our campuses? Those are all those proactive strategies that Dale was already working on in his current position, but he was just stretched too thin. So what I said was, Dale, your job is to focus us around being proactive so that if something happens, we can deal with it, but we want to be on the front end to prevent things from happening.
I found that an interesting choice, and the teachers like him a great deal. One of my old friends who used to be in the school system, Don Mulder, thinks a great deal of him. So it was interesting to see that this choice was made. And I don't know him personally, but I've heard a lot of things about him, and it's a very different approach than most school systems would choose, because most people would choose a retired police officer.
Dale's a good man. And the approach, because I've been in school systems that have gone to the retired law enforcement or someone from law enforcement, and they've worked out well in many cases. In many cases, sometimes they have not. What I was looking for was somebody who was connected to schools, because schools are a different environment. I'm not interested in going out here and arresting kids for any and everything. I'm interested in people who really understand how do we make sure that young people understand that there is a right and a wrong decision that you have to make. How do you be proactive in those situations? And so, again, with Dale's background, Dale's knowledge of the school system, Dale's knowledge of our practices and protocols, and then when I talked to Dale about this position, Dale was really, really big on being proactive. A lot of folks I talked to was all about, this is what you need to do if it happens. And I wasn't interested in that. I was interested in making sure that we had folks trained and in place to prevent things from happening.
So let me ask a couple other questions about where you're kind of, it has to do with kind of philosophy of teaching and evaluation and other things and let's just start with this, the evaluation. What we've heard from some people about the evaluation process that it can be instituted in the school system. Whoa, I'm sorry, man.
Oh, you're fine.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
So the new evaluation system, and I'm looking at my notes here because we've been talking to a lot of teachers and students and in preparation for you coming on this program for this first time. And that we understand there's a new evaluation system being piloted that is kind of based more on numbers rather than the old evaluation system, which some people felt was much more human and really evaluated teachers in a better way. And there's a huge debate, as you know, in schools around the country, and I think the debate will happen in Baltimore County now, over whether we should be evaluating teachers on the basis of students' test scores, which what I heard and read was that 50% of the teacher scores will come from evaluation will come out of the test scores. So talk a bit about that.
Well, and it's a national issue that we're dealing with right now, and I think across the country nationally, and we all agree that there needs to be a new evaluation system for teachers, for principals, for administrators that really was built on professional growth. Everyone agreed with the what. It was the how. And so across the country, that we were the only profession that was sort of evaluating individuals and not including outcomes as an evaluatory method. What I've always said is that I truly believe that we need to evaluate our principals, our teachers, our administrators, even myself, on student growth. The question is, how do we measure student growth? And that's where the anxiety comes in, because there's not been a statistical method that has been proven to be valid for measuring student growth. What we've done, though, in Baltimore County is we work very, very collaboratively with our collective bargaining units. And so because Maryland is a race to the top state, our teacher and principal evaluations will now be 50% on qualitative, which we're using in Baltimore County, the Charlotte Danielson rubric that really measures professional practices. But then the quantitative part will be 50%. And so right now, the way it is, 10% is on the Maryland State Assessment or the high school assessments. 10% is around the School Progress Index, which still has student test scores in it. And then 30% is based on student learning objectives, which principals in the school system create for teachers working along with teachers. Right now, there is some talk around the state of Maryland whether we need to go to 20% being the Maryland State Assessment or high school assessments, and then another 10% for School Progress Index. And we have negotiated with our collective bargaining units, and TAPCO has been at the table the entire time with us, that we will do 10% MSA, 10% HSA, which is one, and then 10% for the School Progress Index. And we've all agreed that we need to go that route. What I've said, though, too, and the superintendent of Montgomery County and I have had several conversations around this, and Dr. Starr actually came out yesterday with it, and it was a conversation we had last week, and I tweeted about this, too. We have a lot.
You're a serious tweeter.
I am. I'm at 2,800 followers now, and I'm trying to get to 3,000. Dr. Starr and I have a competition going on here.
All right. Well, the show will help that.
I appreciate that.
What's your tweet? What's your handle?
DDance_BCPS.
Okay.
And I'll say that at the end of the show, too, Mark, remind me.
I will.
But there's a lot going on in education right now. We have teacher and principal evaluations going on right now. We have new state assessments that are coming on right now. The PARC assessments will be replacing MSAs and HSAs. And then we have this whole Common Core state standard movement that's going on. And so with all this stuff happening at the same time, we're going to run into a train wreck. So what the Dr. Starr and I have talked about, and I completely agree, is I'm all about defining for folks the what. The what is Common Core state standards. This is a dramatic shift in instruction for our kids. This is raising standards for kids. It's making sure that kids are prepared for college and or careers. It's making sure that we put the foundation in place as early as kinder, going all the way to 12th grade. But we have to get that right. And when you're trying to do Common Core, you're trying to implement new state assessments that will be happening in the next couple of school years, and you're trying to evaluate people as you define the what, it's tough for anyone. And so in Baltimore County, I've said we need to have a world-class curriculum. We will have a world-class curriculum, and that's where our folks are putting the effort. And my job is to work with our state officials and with the federal officials who work with education to figure out how do we make sure we get that part right. Because a lot of things are in a lot of balls in the air right now, and ultimately we're making these decisions on behalf of kids. We need to make them right the first time.
So when you talk about this, that core curriculum, I've gotten a lot of emails from people all over the state and the country about core curriculum, feeling that in some ways some of this core curriculum, especially when it comes to literature and other aspects of this curriculum, are dumbing down for kids, that are taking away the creative aspect, taking away the real great pieces of literature, taking away poetry, taking away things that kind of add to both the analytical and creative spirit and understanding of a child. So a lot of issues I think some people have with how this core curriculum is being developed.
I think what I've seen and what I've heard as I've talked to teachers, I've talked to a lot of folks at the state and national level, we all agree that Common Core is will level the playing field, will raise expectations for kids. It's all about, again, the how. So as a superintendent, I'm all about defining the what for our teachers. These are the standards. This is what we expect to see when we go in our classrooms. This is what we expect to be taught in our classrooms. What I am not interested in doing is telling teachers how to do it. The creativity, the innovation of great teaching comes from getting the standard, unpacking the standard, and then figuring out how do you approach the standard so your students are actually learning at the level in which you want them to. So I'm not interested, and I always tell people, we should never be interested in taking that innovation, that creativity, that energy away from great teaching to make that happen. But we also have to make sure that in our school system, as we're developing a high-quality curriculum, and that's what we're more committed to doing, that we're doing in conjunction with our teachers' union, once we have this quality curriculum, we also have to have quality resources, because great teachers are going to go out here and find resources and pull things together.
Do.
And you want that. You really, really want that. You also want to have resources out there as well that can supplement what teachers are doing.
So finally, because I know you have to run.
You're good.
Let's take a brief break, and we're going to come right back and have another 5 or 10 minutes and go to our other guests and shift to the Middle East.
No problem.
All right? So stay with us. We'll be right back with Dr. Dance. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And before we jump to the Middle East, we have some fascinating guests lined up with that. Sam Faddis, former CIA agent, Bilal Saab, and Dr. Adil Shamu, and other folks joining us from all perspectives. It will be a really interesting conversation. We'll finish this interesting conversation about our Baltimore County Public Schools with our new superintendent. Dr. Dance is with us, and it's been a pleasure to have him on the studio with us. And this is one of the major school systems in our state and our country, and one of the most interesting, at least from my perspective. And Dr. Dallas Dance has been here now
six months.
So one of the things teachers have told us, and you may not want to talk about this yet. And you can say, I don't want to talk about this yet, which is fine. But we have teachers who have said to us that there's conversations going on in schools about implementing a program where the county will pay for and all students are supposed to take the SAT.
Yes.
So that we've heard this. They said, you know, that we can't say this officially. Why don't we get fired? I don't think
I get
fired.
No, it's officially out there. It's officially
so,
out there.
So talk a bit about that idea.
Well, and folks know I'm all about equity and access and opportunity for kids. And so what we said was when we came on board, we're working on this quality curriculum for folks, and we have worked to put together with our teachers a trajectory that basically says if we have kids who are on this trajectory all the way from pre-K to 12th grade, they're going to be prepared for college and or career, whichever one they choose to do. But one of the indicators is making sure that kids have actually had the opportunity to sit for and be exposed to the SAT test. So in 8th and 9th grade, all of our students in Baltimore County take Ready Step. Ready Step is a precursor to the PSAT. In 10th and 11th grade this year, our students took the PSAT. And, of course, that's how you get your National Merit Scholars from the PSAT. And then this year, for the first time, all of our juniors in the spring will actually sit for the SAT. So they will have an opportunity to be exposed to the exam. And what I really, really like about it is that it used to be that you would take the SAT, you get your ticket, you take it at another campus, you might take it somewhere that you're not familiar with, you're rushing, it's a Saturday morning. We remove all those barriers. This will be during the school day at your school where you're familiar with the environment, where you're comfortable. And a lot of the part of the testing anxiety comes from just being comfortable in the testing environment. We're removing all those barriers, and we're giving every single junior in Baltimore County the opportunity to do that.
So now, two of my producers graduated from Baltimore County High Schools.
Okay. Now, you know you have to tell me the high schools.
If I have them right, I have this right, gunnery, it's Randallstown and Dundalk. I think so, yeah. So, we had this conversation. And one of the things that they said was a lot of young people in those communities don't take the SATs because in working class communities, a lot of kids end up going to community colleges first for 2 years and then transfer to a four-year institution, so they don't have to take the SAT. And that's A. And B, that if everyone takes the SAT, then everything falls down, the scores fall.
Well, I would answer it two ways. Yeah. I'm not thinking about scores. At this point, it's about equity, opportunity, access for our kids. And there are several kids who would not even think about college because they don't think that they could even do well in the SAT. They take the SAT, they do phenomenal, they end up going to college. And many of these students are the first in their families to go to college, and they realize that it is a possibility. The second thing, too, is that we have to make sure that we're not lowering expectations for kids. So I've been very clear in this one, and I get this conversation a lot, you know, college versus work, which is more important. I believe that through a high-quality curriculum, you prepare kids for any post-secondary opportunity they want. We're not going to make decisions for kids in terms of whether they're going to college or not. That's their choice. But we are saying as a school system, you'll be prepared for whatever you want to do once you leave us. And if we've not done that right, we've not done our job. So if a young person wants to go to college when they leave us, they're prepared for it. If they don't want to go to college, they're still prepared for the opportunity and for the future. We have to make sure that we have pathways in place for kids to be successful regardless of what they want to do when they leave. One avenue that we look at is through our career and tech ed program. So we're doing a thorough review right now of making sure that we have programs in place at the career and technical education avenue where students will be able to be employed. They can get a high school diploma, they can get a certificate, and they're going into the workplace if they choose to do that. But the decision to go to college will not be one that Baltimore County Public Schools will make for any of its students. They will be prepared for whatever opportunity they want to do once they leave us.
I'm excited to watch how this all unfolds.
I'm going to tell you, I'm having fun in the process. But I'll tell you, I'm excited about what's going to happen here because I'm going to tell you, we have our kids at the table with us. And the more I go in schools and I talk to them about their future, I talk to them about the role they play in moving our school system forward, if we have them on board with us, I'm going to tell you, anything is possible.
I think that's true. And this is our first meeting. We look forward to, as I said during the break, to arrange for you to come back in January.
Anytime, you let me know.
And have a much longer conversation and really push it out there for all of our listeners and teachers and students to get involved. And as I said, I'm familiarly involved with the Baltimore County School System, so it means a lot to me.
Anytime, let me know. And hopefully your viewers will now follow me on Twitter at ddance _BCPS.
Say it again?
Ddance _BCPS.
Got it. And so we'll put that on our website as well. And I'll put it on Facebook tonight so you all can stay in touch and we will stay in touch.
I appreciate it. Mark, thank you so much for the invite, and I definitely look forward to being back.
Dr. Dallas Dance, thank you so much.
Thanks,
good to have you. Thank you.
Good seeing you.
Folks, we're going to take like a 30-second break, set up for our next guest on the Middle East. Don't go away.